I'm Susan Yawkey with VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Coming up, Obama details an Afghan troop drawdown. The president on Egypt, Syria, and Israel in a major address. A changing attitude towards the Obama administration in the Middle East and North Africa.
Whether it's proportionate to his actions are hard to say, or the events that have unfolded, especially in the last 2 years.
And an Africa brain gain thanks to growing African economies. It's all ahead. U.S. President Barack Obama says about one half of American forces still in Afghanistan will leave the country by this time next year. As VOA's Kent Klein reports from the White House, the president made the announcement during his annual State of the Union address, which focused largely on the U.S. economy.
The president said 34,000 troops will come home from Afghanistan over the next year. That would put the United States on pace to have all its combat forces out by the end of 2014, as planned.
This drawdown will continue, and by the end of next year, our war in Afghanistan will be over.
The president called for ongoing U.S. training of Afghan forces and continued counterterrorism efforts worldwide, including a legal framework to guide those operations. In his fifth annual address to Congress and the first of his second term, Mr. Obama laid out his agenda for the coming year. After his inaugural address last month emphasized social issues, the president used his State of the Union speech to refocus attention on his plan to boost the U.S. economy. He called on both parties in Congress to support his proposals to help the middle class, create jobs, and reduce the deficit.
Nothing I'm proposing tonight should increase our deficit by a single dime. It is not a bigger government we need, but a smarter government that sets priorities and invests in broad-based growth.
In the Republican Party response, Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, who has been mentioned as a possible presidential candidate in 2016, said Mr. Obama's economic plan depends too heavily on government spending.
And therefore, as you heard tonight, his solution to virtually every problem we face is for Washington to tax more, borrow more, and spend more.
Those polled in a recent public opinion survey listed the economy, jobs, and the budget deficit as their top concerns. On foreign policy, the president issued a warning to North Korea, which conducted a nuclear test early Tuesday.
Provocations of the sort we saw last night will only further isolate them. As we stand by our allies, strengthen our own missile defense, and lead the world in taking firm action in response to these threats.
Mr. Obama also said the U.S. and its allies will do what is necessary to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. On Syria, the president pledged to keep up the pressure on the government there, but did not commit to military force. He also announced that he will visit the Middle East in March and promised continued support for Israel's security and peace in the region. On a key domestic issue, Mr. Obama asked lawmakers to speed passage of legislation to update U.S. immigration policy.
And as we speak, bipartisan groups in both chambers are working diligently to draft a bill, and I applaud their efforts. So let's get this done. Send me a comprehensive immigration reform bill in the next few months, and I will sign it right away, and America will be better for it. Let's get it done.
Senator Rubio agreed on the need for immigration reform, but he called for stricter enforcement of existing laws.
We need a responsible permanent solution to the problem of those who are here illegally. But first, we must follow through on the broken promises of the past to secure our borders and enforce our laws.
The president also appealed for passage of his gun control initiatives. He said that more than 1,000 people have died from guns in America since the killing of 20 children and 6 adults at a Connecticut school in December. He talked about one victim, a 15-year-old girl from Chicago named Hadia Pendleton, who was gunned down days after marching in his inaugural parade.
Just 3 weeks ago, she was here in Washington with her classmates, performing for her country at my inauguration. And a week later, she was shot and killed in a Chicago park after school, just a mile away from my house.
Hadia's parents were among the shooting victims' families who attended the speech. Mr. Obama will make separate trips to North Carolina, Georgia, and Illinois this week to seek support for his agenda. The annual address comes from a requirement in the U.S. Constitution that the president report to Congress from time to time on the State of the Union. Kent Klein, VOA News. the White House.
At one point in President Obama's State of the Union address, he focused on issues concerning the Middle East and North Africa, including the Arab Spring.
In the Middle East, we will stand with citizens as they demand their universal rights and support stable transitions to democracy. We know the process will be messy, and we cannot presume to dictate the course of change in countries like Egypt. But we can and will insist on respect for the fundamental rights of all people. We'll keep the pressure on a Syrian regime that has murdered its own people and support opposition leaders that respect the rights of every Syrian. And we will stand steadfast with Israel in pursuit of security and a lasting peace.
VOA correspondent Elizabeth Arad is in our Middle East Bureau in Cairo, where she is observing the region. First off, we asked her about the reaction in Egypt to the Obama administration.
Well, it's quite telling. Right now down in Tahrir Square, there's a very large portrait of Mr. Obama, and it's X'd out. There have been big signs condemning the U.S., and this is such a turnaround from 2 years ago when they really looked to the U.S. to support. These are the protesters, the anti-Muslim Brotherhood, pro-secular, pro-liberal, with a distinct anti-American edge to it. So I think from all counts, there is a growing sense of anti-Americanism, and therefore Mr. Obama, despite his early promise and his speech here in 2009, it's really soured to a very, very large extent. Oddly enough, I think probably the closest relations, just because they are in power, is the Muslim Brotherhood and continuing to be the army because of this large annual donation of aid. And so that keeps the fundamental ties strong. But just on the street, it's pretty anti-American.
Why has there been this change of heart?
I think that they expected more support for the uprisings, more support for the various efforts to move forward. But I think the U.S. is also in a bit of a bind because, on the other hand, they also say they don't want people to interfere with the movement. So it's a very delicate line to walk. And I think perhaps it has, but it's been viewed condemned if you do, condemned if you don't. And that's added to it.
And then if we move over to Syria, the Obama administration has had this policy of not directly arming the opposition. What is the feeling there about the administration?
Well, I think there's huge frustration on the part of the opposition there. They've been asking everybody to help them be armed for a very, very long time. They are getting help and from various Gulf Arab countries and others in the region. But for the U.S., it's become especially tricky as this has gone on longer because some of the more influential fighters in the opposition are Islamic militants. One group, the Nusra Front, the U.S. government has declared a terrorist al-Qaeda-linked organization. And so he was very careful in his State of the Union address. Mr. Obama said that, you know, they would support the opposition, those people who, you know, are basically clean, that haven't been these ties that could cause trouble in the future.
Obama is a supporter of the use of drones in certain situations. How are they looked at in the Middle East?
Well, it doesn't yet have the kind of reputation that they do in Pakistan and Afghanistan, where there's been many civilian casualties over the years. There's certainly in quite big use in Yemen, and there have been a few civilian casualties from that, and that certainly picked up, you know, sort of the anti-American feeling when that happens. I think we were really going to see a difference, perhaps, maybe, over the next coming years is in North Africa. We're already seeing in Libya the drones. There's pretty much sure they're not armed, but it could be a much larger issue and have a larger role to play in the coming years.
Obama, in his address, did mention Israel. It wasn't a lot that he said, but he did express support for the Israeli government. How is that perceived?
Well, I think that's expected. It's Mr. Obama, whatever people thought when he first came in, has certainly continued the American, the U.S. policy of support of Israel. And that, going back decades, has caused a fair amount of ill will from various quarters in the Arab world. And you can find from, you know, some most hardline anti-Israelis to just, you know, foreign policy experts who are quite readily say that until the U.S. changes its position on that, it will always come into stumbling blocks in the region.
When Obama came into his first term more than 4 years ago now, there was so much excitement in the Middle East about his new administration, a fresh look. That's kind of worn out now.
Yes, it has. and continent-wide, too. I think, you know, there's proud that his father was from Africa, that he came to Cairo early in his career, in his term. And it's just, I think, any time the promise is that high, it's bound to come down. Whether it's proportionate to his actions are hard to say, or the events that have unfolded, especially in the last 2 years.
VOA correspondent Elizabeth Arrett speaking with us from Cairo. VOA invites you to share a glimpse of your life through photography and become eligible to win a new iPad. VOA helps give you insights into the world. Now we want to share your world with us. Send us your best photos, ones that capture the spirit or the essence of the people and places in your life. VOA judges will choose a winner. For a complete list of contest rules, go to voanews.com/iPad. African leaders have long sought a solution to the so-called brain drain, losing their best young minds to jobs in the West or in Asia. But recent studies indicate that is changing. From Johannesburg, Peter Cox reports, many African students who study abroad now find opportunities to use their training at home.
19-year-old Moroccan student Reda Merdi is finishing up school at the African Leadership Academy in Johannesburg. In August, he will head to the prestigious University of Pennsylvania in the United States, where he will study international relations and business. Merdi says despite the opportunity to study in the United States, his long-term ambition is to use his educational training in Africa.
It is more exciting to work in Africa these days. Like, there are way more opportunities, a lot of space for you to work, a lot of space to prove yourself. And also because, I mean, there are a lot of exciting things going on the African continent.
According to the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, 7 of the world's top 10 fastest-growing economies are now in Africa. Statistics compiled by the World Economic Forum indicate many of Africa's growing economies have significantly increased the retention of educated workers. Nigeria was ranked 112 in the world in 2008 for retaining educated workers. It is now ranked 48th. South Africa has risen from 72nd place to 48th place in the world rankings, and Ghana has risen from 125th to 53rd place. A recent survey from the Johannesburg private equity firm Jacana found that 70% of African students pursuing Master of Business Administration degrees at leading American and European schools plan to return to Africa after graduation. That does not surprise Rebecca Harrison, project director at the African Management Initiative, which helps to educate managers on the continent.
Anecdotally, my sense is that there's a real shift. We're starting to establish some links with a lot of the top business schools, particularly in the States and in Europe, have Africa clubs. So people who are interested in working in Africa in the future. And some are from Africa, some are just from elsewhere, but interested in the continent. And we hear from them that their membership is growing quite dramatically. And they all want to come over here and do internships here, consulting projects here. They're interested in exploring working here.
The African Leadership Academy, or ALA, was established with the goal of producing the next generation of African leaders. The school is very selective, only admitting 3% of applicants. Fred Swanaker, one of the academy's founders, developed the curriculum and program to encourage ALA students to return to the continent after studying abroad. He says it was important to give students as many opportunities as possible to network and work on the continent.
Our overall philosophy is that the main reason why people should come back to Africa is not out of any sense of obligation or because we're forcing them to, but because they really see the tremendous opportunities that exist here for them, and because they see a wonderful future and a real opportunity for them to make a difference.
There's also a financial incentive. Most students' tuition is covered through forgivable loans. If the student returns to Africa by the age of 25 and stays for 10 years, their loans are forgiven. If not, they pay them off with interest. But opportunity appears to be the main draw.
If you think like an entrepreneur, then Africa is really your paradise. You can really be the next African Sam Walton or the African Bill Gates or Steve Jobs. No one has done that yet. You can be that person.
That idea resonated with Merdi, whose plans have changed because of the message.
At the beginning, when I started developing an interest for business and economics in general, I thought that, you know, if you wanted to be influential in banking, for example, you had to work in New York or in London. But then, like, ALA made me realize that it wasn't the case.
While economics have helped to ease Africa's brain drain problem, the African Management Initiative's Rebecca Harrison says African leaders need to focus on helping distribute the resources and support needed for the next educated African generation. Peter Cox for VOA News, Johannesburg.
This has been VOA's Middle East Monitor podcast. Join us Monday through Friday for news from the region and of interest to the region. And for more Mideast coverage, visit our website at MiddleEastVoices.com. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Thanks for joining us.